Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Power to Be You and Rise to Win for Our Youth Movement and listeners. I am Sandra Bueno, and I am coming to you straight from West Palm Beach, Florida, and it is my pleasure today to be able to have with us a very special individual, a lady who truly is walking the walk when we speak of kids and bringing intervention and creating a different reality for what our youth are going through today. And what I'd like to do immediately is bring you into who our guest is. She is Dr. Twyla Tyler, who represents the High Ridge Family Center. She has a doctorate in clinical psychology from Nova Southeastern University. She completed an internship at LSU Medical Center in New Orleans. She has over 20 years' experience with adolescents and families, and she has been with the High Ridge Family Center for the nine past years with 5.5 years as Chief of Clinical Services. And rather than speaking more, I really want her to just get online right away and for us to start discussing what is taking place, what is going on really behind the scenes when it comes to the juvenile situation. Right now there's so much going on that we are all aware of, and it is one thing to speak of it and say we can make change. It is another to be able to say, I have experience and I know what's going on firsthand, and I also know and I'm aware of what solutions are there in the future that can really help us, not just in our community, but across the nation and the world. So, Dr. Tyler, are you on the line?
Yes, Dr. Taylor. Yeah.
Dr. Taylor, I apologize. Yes, good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you.
Well, it's
thanks for having us. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak about High Ridge Family Center. It's just such a needed program. I mean, our youth are in crisis, and it's just very concerning because as the budgets get closer and closer, there's more and more cuts being made, and you know, rather than cutting services such as ours, this is a time that we need to be adding services, and we just struggle right now to maintain.
And what would you say really is, well, can you please take us, first of all, what the High Ridge Family Center is and who does it serve?
Okay, yes. We are a Monday through Friday residential treatment center for at-risk youth. We service people, families with at-risk youth between the ages of 11 and 16. And we focus on three main areas: home, school, and peers. And this is a free service to Palm Beach County residents. It is our mission and our philosophy is prevention. We are really trying to get in there when these youth and families are starting to have trouble, and we are trying to prevent them from ending up in the juvenile justice system, from ending up dropping out of school, becoming pregnant, getting involved with gangs, drugs, you know, running away from home. So it really is an opportunity to turn these children's lives around as well as their families. And the way we operate is the children come in here and stay with us Monday through Friday. They attend school on the premises. We work collaboratively with Palm Beach County School Board, who provides us four teachers, Palm Beach County certified teachers, and we also provide four behavioral staff that are helping the kids learn how to be successful in the classroom setting. And mind you, our capacity is 48. We did have 72 beds, but we were cut this past round of budget cuts down to 48. So the classes are relatively small. We're working with them to address any kind of school issues that they have. They come back to our facility after school. They attend group therapy where they're learning how to manage their anger and their frustration appropriately, build their self-esteem, develop these healthy coping skills. And then they have family sessions in the evening to address their family issues. So it really is a very well-rounded program. And then they have the opportunity to go home every week and practice everything that they've been learning at the center throughout the week. They need to transfer that to the home setting, because if they can't do that, then ultimately, you know, things won't work in the future. And then we monitor their progress week by week, and we work with them intensively like this for 12 weeks. And it is amazing the turnaround that can occur when families and children, you know, see the opportunity that they have, that they can make something of their lives.
Now, when you mentioned the evening sessions, are those sessions when they are in class, are they also there with their parents?
Yes, yes. Well, they're in classroom being educated throughout in the days, but the evening sessions that you're talking about are family sessions, and that is a mandatory part of our program, because we strive hard not to be a place where parents drop off their problem children to be fixed. Like you drop your car at the mechanic and say, here, give me a call. Mandatory family therapy is required. So parents are coming to the center, you know, usually three times a week to drop them off on Mondays, to pick them up on Fridays, but again, to participate in the family therapy. And that's where the real change can occur, because it's not about blaming, like, who started what, and you said this, and I said that because you made me. It's really about looking at the way the entire family is interacting, and typically the entire family is in chaos, and that could be because of misbehaviors, you know, of one child, but everybody can make some changes. Everybody takes a step towards working to a healthier family.
And what are some scenarios, for example, that you might encounter with some of the children coming in?
Well, we could take a look first and foremost at the kind of referrals that we're getting, because I found recently that we've been getting about a third of our referrals from school. And so those kind of issues may be that a child, for a number of different reasons, is becoming more disrespectful towards authority, getting kicked out of class, getting, you know, detentions and suspensions, or they could not only be arguing and being disrespectful and defiant towards authority figures like teachers, but they could also start hanging around a lot of negative peers, and their behaviors are changing, and they're possibly, you know, getting into fights and threatening other kids in the classroom as well. Their grades start falling. They might be failing different subjects. They might be skipping school altogether. We've gotten a lot of kids that just are at the point of dropping out of school. They have no interest in school anymore. So those might be some of the school issues that we're dealing with. Another third of our population are being referred to us through the court systems. It's very, very sad scenarios when children have been, you know, they're starting to just totally disregard their parents' rules. They're leaving. They may be getting arrested and being brought down to the juvenile assessment center. And all of a sudden, their parents might be saying, that's it. I don't know what to do anymore. I've had it. I don't want to come pick up my child. And they need to know that there is an opportunity for intervention, or maybe they do pick up their child from the detention center or from the juvenile assessment center, but they end up going to court. And rather than propelling them through the juvenile justice system, they might be given an opportunity to be diverted into treatment to address the real issues that are going on. The child's behavior, of the acting out behavior, is a symptom of what is happening, the disintegration of the family, the disintegration of this whole society, and we're an opportunity for this family to be able to reconnect in a healthy way so that they don't have to give up on their child.
And it seems, I'm sorry, it just seems like, you know, I mean, you say 48-bed facility, and we're looking at all of the things that you're mentioning. I mean, this is a national epidemic with so many different hot buttons that are pressed just by you saying, you know, here is number one. I mean, for me, it goes back down to even whether it's teachers or educators or the school system, you know, it also follows even further back into the relationship that they have within the home environment with the parents. If the parents do not have an ability to create respect and in an environment where children are feeling, you know, loved and guided and mentored, then the kids are going to carry this behavior across, and it goes into the school, and without a teacher or a system there that will say, look, that will address these issues, the kids will continue, and now they start infecting others and affecting others. You know, and it's like a spiraling that keeps on coming down, and at the end, here you're faced with the condition of having a child that if someone like yourself or the High Reach Center is not there to support them, where does this child end up?
Well, typically in jail, on the streets, you know, because they've been kicked out of their home, their parent has had it, possibly end up in a psychiatric hospital, especially if we weren't around to provide some sort of intervention, substance abuse facilities, are dead. I mean, those are the options if these kids keep going the way they go. And you mentioned that, you know, yes, we have 48 beds, and quite frankly, I think that our program, you know, not only needs to have our dorms back, because we have 36 kids on our wait list right now that we could be helping right now. We could be helping 36, well, we don't even have 36 beds, but we could at least help those 24 out of those 36 kids that are on our wait list right now if we had those two dorms reopened. That's, you know, 24 more families whose lives could be turned around. And quite frankly, I think our program needs to be a model program for all other counties, you know, in the state, and then all other states across the nation. I continue to hear from people who I talk to about my program that they've never heard of anything like this, and if only more people were doing it. So, you know, we're at a critical junction here that, you know, there's a possibility of this program, you know, being cut further or, quite frankly, being closed down, and that's not what we need right now. Our children are our future, and if we don't invest in our children, then what kind of future do we have to look forward to?
Now, why is it that this program can be actually shut down or reduced or minimized? What's going on right now?
Well, we are funded by the Board of County Commissioners, and as such, the funding is based on taxpayer dollars. So, as you know, Palm Beach County has really had to drastically reduce services as a result of the income that they're not getting from real estate taxes, you know, the various different ad valorem tax base. And so that has had a direct effect on the services that we're able to provide. And as Bob Weissman said during last year's budget round talks, that the next couple of years are going to be crucial. And so we're getting ready to go into the second round of budget cut talks. And quite frankly, we need the support of the community in which we serve. We need for those people who we have served or have the potential to serve to stand up and let everybody know that, you know, okay, we understand that cuts need to be made, but let's not cut out our future, because these kids are our future.
And what you just said right now, it's, you know, we can completely keep on going with the issues. And what I can say is that you are precisely right when you say your program can be a model, and that is how it needs to be presented, because I have seen, and I know that you have, because this is what you're involved with, I see how in communities, and because of politics, all of a sudden a program that is running and that is effective and that is creating change and that is impacting and that it has people who are knowledgeable, people who have given their lives to the cause, people who are really working hands-on changing lives, transforming futures. I see all of a sudden these programs being cut down or even completely canceled. And then here you have a new wave of government entities asking people to come in and, you know, give their opinion as to what other programs can be instituted. And that to me seems like such a waste of time and such a waste of valuable resources that are already implemented, already tried, and, you know, that needs to stop. I believe that right now with the change that President-elect Obama is bringing on, and we're talking about going back to the grassroots, going back to the communities, how can people get involved and engaged? Well, let's protect what's already there. And what's working, let's bring in new elements, bring in new blood, at least keep what's going on there and just invest in extending it. Now, what could be done to help the High Ridge Center, for example?
Well, you know, always everybody could say, well, more money, more money. And part of the problem, I believe, is that we know our program works. I, you know, track successful completions in our program, and we have over a 50% completion. I think right now we're hovering at a 58% completion, and that number always has to be taken in context with what a national average of completion rates for a voluntary unlocked residential facility would be, and they range from 20-something percent to maybe 40%. So we're well above the national average in our ability to help children and families complete this program. But it's so very difficult to prove what doesn't happen. Do you see what I mean? It's sort of like, and that's what a lot of times funding agencies and the number people and the money people want to be able to see is, well, okay, you say your program is effective, now prove it. You know, and it's difficult to prove something that never actually occurs. So we're working really hard to help these children turn their lives around and stay out of the juvenile justice system. And that's one of the only ways that we can actually prove that our program works, is that they never actually end up in juvenile justice.
And that's very hard because unless you were following each person, tagging each person across the entire span of their lifetime, so that then you can prove it and say, see, after 30 or 40 years, they never went to jail. Yeah, that's
right.
Ineffective. I mean, when it comes to a kid's life, is intervention can take place just by being at the right time and the right, you know, with the right, say the right thing to take that kid to not go down the wrong path or get in a car or, you know, take that gun or drop out of school. So, you know, there's so many elements in here that to me are just, you know, incredible that you're sharing this. Now, could you share some of those stories that where you were able to see the transition or you were able to see the completion with some of the youth or in their families?
Oh, I'll tell you, just a couple of weeks ago, I was walking through our family room and there was a daughter and a mother sitting there. She was getting ready to complete the program, and she was just so proud. I could see that she was the pride. Her face was beaming, and so I stopped and I said, "How are you? You're getting ready to leave, and you know, how are things going?" And she said, "Dr. Taylor, look at." She had her report card in her hand. She said, "I have never made A's and B's in my life, and look." She's like, "I was ready to drop out of school, and now I can't wait to go back. I know I can do it." So that sense of accomplishment. And, you know, on the other hand, the flip side is how many parents I hear tell me, you know, "I have my daughter back. I have my son back." That they were, you know, they saw that their child was slipping through their fingers, that they were falling through the cracks, whether that be in the educational system, whether that be with the kind of friends that they were choosing, the decisions that they were making, just, you know, with an adolescent sort of all-knowing, self-righteous attitude that kind of comes with adolescence that, you know, no harm will really come to them. But, you know, at least we had the opportunity to intervene, to get them to slow down and try to think and connect their behaviors with some consequences, some real-life consequences that could be happening to them. So those kind of situations are just so heartwarming for me. Another situation, we have a level system in the program where the children collect points based on their positive behavior, and those points add up to getting a higher level, and the higher level, the more privileges that they earn. So they start to feel pride in their accomplishments. And one of the girls was standing up during level meeting, and we have a little graduation ceremony where they get their completion medals and a certificate of a graduation. And she said, you know, the best thing about this program was that when I came in, I hated to read, and I'd never finished anything. I never even finished a book. And now that I'm graduating, I've read 8 books since I've been here, and I now know I love to read. And I've not only finished 8 books, but this is the first this is the first real thing that I've ever finished and completed in my life.
Well, that's great.
Powerful.
That is powerful. Now, I will ask you, what is, because you said 2 things, okay? And I come from the personal development angle, you know, having grown up as an immigrant, having come through even within my family where I was conditioned by my you know, the generational thinking of, you know, you have to do this and don't think that you can ever accomplish this because you can, you know, for one reason or the other. And I fought through that. And one of the things that you just brought up when you said about how, you know, as an agency, you are asked to prove it. One of the things that I see as a transition into the 21st century and for us to be able to come and help these youth, because the possibilities are there, the options are there, the education is there, and the people who are making a difference and who want to do it are also there. What we need to do now is be able to not fall underneath this boxed ideology that you can make a difference only when you have there are labels. And when you say you prove it, like when they say scientific, can you scientifically prove that your program works? That disempowers that person who's going to step up and say, listen, I can make a difference in this child's life. And in speaking to the community, if community members are listening right now, this is again where I would say, do not be afraid to, you know, to step up because you might not have a degree, or because you haven't followed certain parameters. But if you are someone who's making a difference and has touched lives and can come and encourage these kids and can come and offer your time, your services, you know, the area of study that you know, all this is how the community can get involved and engage. Because kids, you know, you will tell me now, Dr. Taylor, if right now, after all that you have done and all that you have seen and all that you know within, you know, the psychology and everything, administrative the experience, what do children need and what can people do to help them?
I think first and foremost, I believe that children need to know that they're valued and they're loved. It's amazing how many times that I see children expressing their emotions through anger. They feel hurt. They feel rejected. They feel unloved. They feel like they're going to be thrown away at any given moment. And that it could be a reality, and that's very difficult. So how does a child navigate those incredible emotions? I mean, I've got a couple of scenarios right now, you know, where a grandmother is ill and has health concerns, and she adopted her daughter's daughter, mm-hmm. you know, but she's getting to the breaking point, you know, and the child is hearing, I can't take it anymore. I have to give you back. You know, how is a child supposed to respond to that? other than, you know, my life has been out of control. I've lost everybody I've ever cared about in my life. And so, yes, of course she has a right to be angry, but underneath all of that is absolute fear and terror that she's going to be alone in the world. So children need to know that they're going to be loved. And it's not about a blaming thing about that these parents need to do this or need to do that. It's more about what you have to take a look at what the parents went through. You know, what kind of family did they grow up in, and how has anybody ever reached out to help them? You know, because if they never received the help and never received any guidance, they're only doing the best that they can with what they know. And so what I'm saying is, don't give up on your child. You know, come to us and we can offer you some help and guidance in working this through. That's what people need. They need to know that people care enough to extend a helping hand to them. And look, it's tough, but you know what? You've survived until this point. In spite of everything that you've gone through, you're strong enough to be here. So let us help. Let us help. We will help you. And if you allow us to help, then you're going to experience some success. Things will change in your family and in your life.
That is so wonderful, Dr. Taylor. Can you give the audience your contact number, your website, how they can contact you, please?
Absolutely. Our number is area code 561-625-2540. All it takes is one phone call to set up an appointment and to take that first step towards regaining a healthier family. The message that I want to let people know is that there is hope. And, you know, okay, you might have to wait a little bit because we don't have as many beds as we used to, but guess what? We're not going to give up on you. We're going to provide you as much help as we can. And if we can't see you in the residential center, we have an outpatient section through our Youth Service Bureau, and you know, you could call the same number, that same number, and if we can't see you in the residential center, we can at least provide you outpatient therapy to you know, until such time that we can get you into the residential center. So,
and what about your website as well?
Yes, thank you. Our website is very simple, www.highridgecenter.com. Or you could go on to the Palm Beach County website, because we are, you know, county funded, and that website is pbcgov.com, and you can find us under the Youth Affairs Division.
Here I am writing it down as well, even though I already have it. But it's something amazing, because I would say, you know, to bring it back down to home, is we are here in a community, and there are enough people in the community, you know, stepping out, and like yourself, like the Highridge Center, like the people that you're under. I mean, enough, you know, to really create and effectuate change. And I believe that what right now we're doing is restructuring and moving around, because I do see that, you know, we can definitely affect an impact. You know, and I think this is, like you mentioned, parents need help. Our generation, the people who are between 30 and 40 years of age, you know, and then their grandparents, a lot of grandparents are having to take care of the grandkids because their parents are, you know, are not in their lives, or because the parents themselves are now in jail. And you said that this whole generational, you know, cycle that keeps on happening. And I believe that it is my belief and it is my mission to come in and break that, you know, break that, and we can. So in closing, I would like to give you an opportunity to share. If you could counsel with President-elect Obama, what would you like to say to him?
I would say continue to support our youth. Continue to support the prevention aspect. Please don't continue any kind of budget cuts that would take away the services that could change and improve lives for our youth, because they are our future. We have to focus on our future. We have to move forward. And I truly believe that with President Obama, being in the White House that we have an opportunity to move forward, that there will be a shifting of values and a refocusing towards the future. And we are part of that future. So, you know, please don't forget about us.
Very well said. And I would also like to just ask you as a human being, as a person, when someone will say to you, prove it, that you, what you've done has been effective, what would your answer to that be?
I think if they were local, I'd say, come see what we do. Come visit our center. Come look, see for yourself a level meeting where the kids are focusing on values of commitment, trust, responsibility, and integrity. Come see and see for yourself if this is working or not.
Wow, Dr. Taylor, that's beautiful. It's been a half an hour. You know, it's so fast to be able to share all of this. But I will tell you that I am so just pleased is one word, but honored to have had the opportunity to interview you here and giving you an opportunity to share with the great work that you are doing and the lives that you've impacted. And yes, you know, we are here for change, and change is taking place, and we're definitely making strides. Because it takes, you know, it takes a while for something to get going and the movement and the momentum, but I believe that this is it. So thank you very much for having been on Power to Be You and Rights to Win, and I look forward to working with you in the near future, specifically with the Rights to Win platform, where we will be presenting to 1,000 kids, and I hope that you and your organization can be present and can have a platform from which to represent the great work that you are doing and the transformation that you're creating.
Count us in, and thank you, Sandra, so much for having me on.
You're welcome, Dr. Taylor.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been an amazing show, and I thank you for having tuned in to Power to Be You and Rights to Win. And again, tune in tomorrow as we will be having the author, David Gelipter, from Underbelly. And Underbelly is the book that has presented the homeless plight in West Palm Beach, Florida. These are accounts from homeless individuals, people who have grown up in West Palm Beach, who have lived in the streets of West Palm Beach, one of the wealthiest communities in America. And these stories were made possible through the contribution of Art and Compassion, the founders of this outreach organization, this ministry, Olga and her husband Marvin Smith. They will be joining us as well, along with the author of Underbelly. And I look forward to being able to see you again and speak with you tomorrow. This is Sandra Bueno signing out.